Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And someone's unmuted, if you could mute, please. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we're on page 2 in Bill's story, the first paragraph that begins with, "I took a night law course." We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Terry S. will be reading the 12 steps, Reggie O. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Lynette P., K.P., and Shelley E. The share ID for Sunday, August 30th, the special edition, is 15,245. That's 15245. This morning's Monday, August 31st, 7 a.m. Eastern Time share ID is 15,249, 15249. Our newcomer greeter for today is Amy K., and Leslie M. will be making the announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Terry S. to read the 12 steps, please.
Hi, good morning. This is Terry S. in Oregon, and I'm celebrating my belly button birthday with my peeps on visions. One, the 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Terry S., and happy birthday. Mm-hmm. Okay, Reggie O., if you'd read the 12 traditions, please.
Thank you, Kathleen, and good morning, everybody. This is Reggie O., and these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And grateful to be of service this morning. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Richie L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in Bill's story on page 2, the first paragraph, I took a night law course. And good morning, Lynette P. If you could get us started, please.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, everybody. This is Lynette P., recovered in Southern California. I took a night law course and obtained employment as investigator for a surety company. The drive for success was on. I'd proved to the world I was important. My work took me about Wall Street, and little by little, I became interested in the market. Many people lost money, but some became very rich. Why not I? I studied economics and business as well as law. Potential alcoholic that I was, I nearly failed my law course. At one of the finals, I was too drunk to think or write. Though my drinking was not yet continuous, it disturbed my wife. We had long talks when I would still her forebodings by telling her that men of genius conceived their best projects when drunk, that the most majestic constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. So a couple things... I can identify with much of this, but a couple things I wanted to focus on. I had underlined and highlighted the last time I went through this book, a newer book, I'd prove to the world. And I can, while Bill is an alcoholic, you know, when I first started reading this with my guide also, she mentioned that, you know, we're trying to identify in and relate, because for years in the program I just wrote this off. And I'd proved to the world. And I thought of myself with my history of eating and when I was in school and living in my head and imagining in this fantasy world while I was eating. And that's what I would do sometimes. I'd think, well, as I'm eating, say, donuts or whatever, I'll prove to them I can stop, or I will impress upon my family or certain people that I can succeed, that I can get out of the life that I'm living and on my own. Yeah, that I could do this. And I see that his illness and his disease is drinking. He says it's not yet continuous, but it's progressing, this whole story, until Bill gets some help and real help, that we see, or I see, that this is a story of his alcoholism progressing before it finally got better. And mine was like that too. And I can see that in him. So I can identify with a lot of his feelings and his imagination and this life that he too is living in his head and in his pride and his ego. So until I can, finally practice the program and doing the steps and living a spiritual life, then I don't have to prove to other people that I can do it. Whatever it is that I think I need to do, I no longer have to prove it. I can live a spiritual life, and my disease does not have to continue to progress any longer. I do not have to relapse any longer. All I have to do is live that sound spiritual life and doing my higher power's will, aligning my will with my higher power's will. And I can live life and not just imagine a life and not just live in my head any longer. It's sound and just spiritual. And it's much, much better, I can say, than what it was before, of course. And thank you for allowing me to share, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Lynette, for getting us started. Okay, again, we're on page 2 in Bill's story, the first paragraph that begins with, I took a night law class, and we're reading and commenting on that one paragraph. So who would like to share on that paragraph this morning?
Rebecca D.
Larry G.
Rebecca.
Sherry H.M.
Okay, I think I heard Rebecca T. I think it
Larry G.
Sherry H.M. I got Larry G., Sherry H.M. And who came after Sherry?
Rowena.
Rowena. And what's your first initial, Rowena?
K.
K, okay. Can take a couple more.
Lauren H.
Lauren H.
George E.
Greg B.
George E. and Craig B., I think I heard. Okay, so let's stop there.
That's Greg.
I have.
Greg, thank you.
Oh, Greg. Greg, okay. Okay, so I have Rebecca T., Larry G., Sherry H.M., Rowena K., Lauren H., George E., I think it was, and Greg B. So if everyone except Rebecca could mute their phone, please. And go ahead, Rebecca, please.
Hello, all you wonderful fellows. This is Rebecca T., grateful recovered one day at a time in Port Angeles, Washington. So grateful to be at this meeting today. Thank you for all your service. Yeah, I took a law night course. Crazy. That was essentially me. Not a law course, but I took this course for my class. I took this course to do my next hobby. I took this course for my school, all in the while I was eating every day so that I could maintain my professional status, so that I could maintain my parent-mother status, so that I can maintain my keeping my life busy status. There was really no down moment in my life, and yet all I wanted was, geez, I wish I could just relax. Geez, I wish I could have more time. Geez, I wish so many people in this world didn't need me so much, you know. And so it was crazy. The paragraph there definitely shows, like someone had said, the progression, but also like the denial. I had so much denial, but I had no clue. So in this new stage and phase of my life and working the 12 steps and this new design for living, I just have the blessings to be honest, have the blessings to wake up every morning with my higher power, ask him for what his will is. I'm working on, you know, some pretty hardcore character defects that don't want to rid themselves as of yet. And part of it is the, you know, self-righteousness and the, or even the relationship with my husband, and thinking I know better and thinking I know his path. And so, so one day at a time, I'm getting to surrender that, get on my knees, maintain right-sized, not only in my body, but in my mind. And then just asking for the will, not wanting to stay in denial. And thankfully, I have all of you and this wonderful program and my higher power. Thank you all for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Rebecca T. Okay, Larry G., good morning. You're up next, followed by Sherry H.M.
Good morning, and thank you for this group who has given service. My name is Larry G. I'm from Northern California. I relate to Bill's story. I have a lot of things in common, although I didn't start a movement that changed the world. But Bill was during his progressive into his alcoholism, he was a snake oil salesman on Wall Street. And I also worked on Wall Street for 30 years. And the first 20 years of my life, I too was dishonest, even though I presented myself as somebody who was of integrity. And Bill came back after a stint away from Wall Street and made amends and became the stockbroker that he knew he could be, and so did I. But the difference is that in the end, food got the worst of me. The compulsive eating got the worst of me. And one of my fears, a longstanding fear that I ate over, was the fear of economic insecurity, which was ridiculous because I didn't suffer economically. So I relate to Bill's story and how progressive my compulsive eating had become to the point where I came into this program on May 17th. I was literally on my knees begging God. So I want to get current. I woke up Sunday morning with that really mean, harsh, I'm going to use the words, that addictive voice telling me that this is all a ruse, that, you know, you can't stay abstinent for the rest of your life. You know, screw the plan of eating, eat what you want to eat. And it terrified me because I haven't had that voice since May 17th. And what I did is I prayed and I decided, okay, Larry, you have to redouble your efforts now. Which means I didn't attend two meetings for the first time last week, which means attending these meetings. I wrote a couple of 10 steps I'll give my sponsor on Monday night. I read the assignment. I got in the meeting I didn't want to get on. I made an outreach call to a person who still suffers. And by the end of the day, I was back in my right mind. And God, I begged God not. I don't want to return to that hell that I was experiencing before May 17th. And I can go there so easily because I'm a compulsive eater of the worst kind. Thank you for your service. I pass.
And thank you, Larry G. Okay, Sherry H.M., you're up next, followed by Rowena K. Good morning, Sherry.
Sherry H.M. from Mount Vernon, Washington. Thank you all for your service. What a great topic. I totally relate to the sentence, the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. And that image management, we can all get caught up in that. I was on a mission to, in some way, prove to the world that I was okay. And doing that through education, writing a book, doing speaking, all that. But, you know, it's only the trying to fill that hole in my heart. And I was trying to fill it actually with food and not God. And it just wasn't working for me. I would say that I had a good relationship with God, but where would I go whenever times were hard is that I would actually go to my refrigerator. So anyway, trying to prove that I'm good enough, I can relate because he was doing the same thing. And it's so tragic that he was completely incapacitated. At one of the finals, he says, I was too drunk to think or write. And I know I was just on a sugar coma, whatever you want to call it. And I'm so relieved that I've been just relieved through this, through God, through these wonderful steps, through you guys, for 6 years now, and I don't miss it. So it's progressive, it's deadly, and at the end, he justifies that he has brilliance, you know, genius, conceived the best projects. And I just was thinking, wow, we can justify anything. So anyway, thank you so much, and I pass.
Thank you, Sherry H.M. All righty, Rowena K., you are up, followed by Lauren H. Good morning, Rowena.
Hi, my name is Rowena K., recovering compulsive overeater. Yeah, I relate to the part that says I wanted to prove myself important. And to me, that meant doing more courses, you know, doing, keeping busy, just constantly trying to improve myself. And everything that I tried to do to improve myself was always scuppered by my binges. So the status that I was looking for, you know, I just couldn't get by doing further education or any of those things. And I was always trying to show people, you know, that I was good enough. And all that really happened was that I continued to binge and get more resentful and more angry and more frustrated. And I also like what it says about my best ideas, you know, usually came when I was in a drunken fog. Well, my best ideas at the end of a binge would be, you know, to restrict, to do more exercise. You know, there was always that was what my best ideas always involved, things like that. And now I guess my best ideas come from being at meetings, having a sponsor, and outreaching with fellows. And, you know, some of the best ideas I've had are, well, they're not my ideas, but, you know, a black and white feed plan. And I've realized one of the things that I do is, you know, shift my meal plans or move a snack time. And then I know that, you know, I'm in trouble when I do that. So I'm grateful to be abstinent today and to be able to share on the meeting. Not to say that that's a requirement of sharing at all, but it feels good to be here. Thank you. I pause.
Thank you, Rowena K. And Lauren H., you're up, followed by George E. Good morning, Lauren.
Hi, Lauren H. From Los Angeles. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, bulimic. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here. Gosh, Bill's story, I love it. Did I feel like Bill felt? Did I do what he did? I know I did what he did, and I was thinking back, gosh, I was proving to the world when I was little. I was a kid trying to prove to the world that I would be the best, I would be good enough, and I would be the best athlete as a child. I would be the best student. I would prove that I would go to the college, and I would do the things and have the outfits and the body. And it was hard because it's impossible to be perfect in my egocentric self. And just like Bill, you know, who's drunk again, and, you know, I'm an addict too. I was eating again. I was in the food again because that's how I soothed when in my ego, perfect visionary self, I couldn't get there. And I would just bring me back to the food over and over and over. It soothed and it worked. And it gave me that effect that I craved to soothe, you know, myself. And so, oh gosh, what a gift it is now that, you know, my sponsor showed me the big book and God. And now I don't have to, I have had a change of perspective, a total shift where I don't prove to anyone anymore. I'm God's child, and that's it. And it's just so freeing to just be amazing how I am right now, every second. And I don't have to prove anything. I just wake up, I connect to higher power, I call God, and meditate and bring God in, and then walk through my day with God all day long. And every single step is God's. And I'm just a servant, and I'm his child. So what a gift to feel that relief and freedom from ego and self. And I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Lauren H. All right, Georgie, you are up next, followed by Greg B. Go ahead, George.
I'm Georgie, compulsive eater, located near Cincinnati, Ohio. You know, that's a tough paragraph for me. It's one of those ones I probably glazed over quite a bit. I remember sitting in meetings with a guy who swore up and down that Bill was a lawyer. And I think one of my character defects is I roll my eyes really easily. And so, you know, I did some investigation. You know, I read Pesnon and I guess he could be right. I mean, Bill was a lot of things. And, you know, an insurance investigator or a sureties investigator is more, today's terms would be like an insurance adjuster, you know. But in his case, he was looking at companies, which is something I have done. And this idea of Wall Street, though, was part of his search for security, you know, money. Money was a big thing in my childhood. You know, I grew up with depression babies and turned adults, turned alcoholic, food addict, all that stuff. And so, you know, this chapter reminds me personally of when it worked, because it did work. You know, it was about changing feelings, you know, about modifying not behavior, but his rationalizations are probably the same ones I used at one time. Oh yeah, you know, if I got a full stomach, you know, I'm just ready to go. You know, I'm ready to start studying. I'm ready to start doing this, that, and the other. And like I said, maybe it worked for a while, and then it quit working. You know, and I think that's why we're all here, in one form or another. And I don't know. I think my awakening, though, or part of my spiritual awakening, was when I read Pass It On, because, you know, it's funny. I always think of the stories as being leads in print, you know. And so they're very well polished. And his is, you know, not just telling his life. It's summarizing the whole rest of the book. You know, that's probably why it's first. And so I think what Bill... You know, Bill came from, you know, a very kind of abusive childhood, no father. You know, his relationship with Lois and Roland Hazard and all those people, you know, was a little mysterious, you know. And I didn't understand Dr. Young's part of it at all. And all that stuff awakened for me when I read Pass It On. And because in many ways, this book raises more questions than it answers sometimes for some people, you know, and maybe that's because I'm an overthinker, you know, and maybe that's part of the root of my disease. But I'm thankful for this meeting. And, you know, it has helped me a lot, and I know it's helped a lot of other people. So keep coming back.
Thank you, Georgie. And before we take Greg B, just a reminder, we are on page 2 in Bill's story, the first paragraph that begins with, I took a night law course. And we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph. So go ahead, please, Greg B.
Good morning, Greg B. from San Jose, California. Good to be on the line again. Grateful alcoholic, compulsive eater, recovered. So my drinking was not yet continuous to disturb my wife. We had long talks when I would still her for her brodings by telling her that men of genius can see the best projects when drunk. When I was like in my teens, I smoked a lot of pot, and I'm a songwriter. I'm a musician, been a musician for 40, well, probably 50 years now, old guy. But I remember I'd get high, and then I'd be writing these songs, and it's like, yeah, oh, that's a good one. Nick, I can't remember the song, but it was a really great one. It was a great one. And, you know, in my mind, I had all these dreams and all these things I was going to achieve. And then later, when I went to college to be a computer programmer, I would, you know, go to the a restaurant where they let you stay all night and study and all that, and I would be bored myself with food, and I'm really going to study this time. And, you know, I'd pay him attention to the food, and I'd just be eating the food, and I'd reward myself with food, or I would be, the goal would be food, really, not finishing that computer program. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, where it's easy to stereotype alcoholics are all this way, addicts, food addicts are all this way. You know, we're a different lot. We're all different. We all have different backgrounds. Me, I was 310 pounds. I hated myself. I was morbidly obese. That's the kind of way I eat. I don't stop. I start eating, I don't stop. And relapse, same way. It was worse. Relapse was worse. So, you know, this is just in the early part of his life before the program was constructed and all this stuff. But this idea that I'm going to use momentum. I'm really going to hit it this time. This time, I'm really going to do it. Really, honey, I'm really going to do it. That is the diet mentality. That is the thing. I'm going to, this diet, this fast, this binge or purge or whatever, this is really going to do it. This OA program, whatever flavor you go by, it has nothing to do with the food. I hate that. I wish I could just solve it with a diet, but I can't. It is about the inside work. Change. One of my sponsors always says, this program is about change. You don't like change. You don't like COVID. I'm a computer programmer. I wish I could just program in the language that I grew up in. But no, I've had to learn 10 or 11. You know, I've got to learn new stuff. People in program change. Meetings change. I move to different geographies. They do different meetings differently. I have to adapt. The world is changing. And so if I don't change with it, you know, I'm in trouble. But this program has changed me inside. I can work stuff out with people. I can deal with conflict. That's all because of program. Change the inside, and the body will change. The mind will change. And my relationship, really, ultimately, the reason I came in the program, my relationships with people were sucky, were bad.
Time, please.
You know? Thank you. I'm Greg D. in California. Thank you. And I'll pass. Love the meeting.
Thank you, Greg D. Okay. Although we value your experience, we do ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who else would like to share on page 2, the first paragraph? I took a night law course.
Mo H.
Hello, this is Rachel from Israel.
Evan U.
Mo H. Is that Evan U?
Yes.
Lorraine.
Okay, and then I did get you, Raphael.
Thank
Lorraine
you.
N. Anyone else?
Barbara P.
Barbara P.
Kathy Z.
Kathy T. Okay. So I have Mo H. Raphael. I didn't get your initial, but I'll get it when we get there. Evan U. E. Raphael E. Evan U. Lorraine N. Barbara P. and Kathy T. I think it was. Okay. So go ahead, please, Mo. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for your service for the month of August, and grateful to be here this morning. What I zeroed in on was the sentence, potential alcoholic that I was. I nearly failed my law course. So he was Bill was identifying himself as a potential alcoholic. I never labeled myself as a potential compulsive overeater. I just thought I was a person that needed to lose weight and needed to find the right diet. So I didn't know about that, but you know, as years went on and the weight continued to pile on, I'd take it off, it would pile back on, that you know, I eventually found these rooms, and in the last almost 5 years now, I've been with this meeting that has absolutely changed my life and has allowed me to be sane through a very, very difficult period that I've been going through. Now, he also says, though my drinking was not yet continuous, so he's also identifying there, it disturbed my wife. So obviously something was going on. If she noticed, and my mother would make comments about my weight. You know, she noticed, but she didn't understand either that I had a disease. So here he is. It's the start of his disease. It's being labeled, but now he's justifying himself with, you know, long talks. He would still her forebodings by telling her that men and women of genius could see their best projects when drunk. And, you know, I, like the other share that talked on that line, felt that I did better when I had a full stomach. You know, I was more alert. I was more awake. At least I thought I was, but I really wasn't because I was working in a fog. So, this chapter, this particular paragraph is really helping us zero in on the power of the disease, how it begins, and where it takes us to. And, you know, it's the destruction of a lot of our lives and, you know, a lot of unhappy moments throughout my earlier years and a lot of yelling and screaming that, you know, wasn't necessary. And that now the way I handle things, I'm so grateful, is so much different. I just, you know, step back and I pause and then I say, okay, what's the next right action? And I'm having to do that a lot now because I'm having to deal with a lot of paperwork and I'm not comfortable with it. But I know with the help of my higher power and all of you and my family, I can do this. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo H. Okay, Raphael E., you're up next, followed by Evan U. Raphael, star one, please, to unmute.
Thank you, Kathleen. Can you hear me? Thank you
yes,
so much.
Yes.
All my family for being there. It is so wonderful. I don't know, I have to ask you guys, is there such a thing as overdosing on program? I don't think there is, because today I need all of the 3 hours that program is offering me. Some changes in my life, and I have to go through, I'm collecting all kinds, doing all kinds of tests to finally have an operation on my back, which I believe, you know, God, please will help me to solve some of the health problems that I am suffering. But the miracle of miracles is really this God-given program, because I cannot believe how I am sailing through it. I pressed 3 minutes, but I already started talking, and so please help me when it's time to tell me. Here in this paragraph, I have to remember that Bill is looking back when he's writing this. He's not there. He's looking back and sees the whole process in front of his eyes of his descent to hell, and then he's emerging out of it. And so it is so incredible that he knows that it was only the beginning. But I want to concentrate on the thing about proving that I am best and I am so on. And in one of the previous shares, somebody said, well, doesn't everybody want to be number one? So I found myself going back to a paragraph in the 12 and 12 that clarifies that it says on page 122 in the 12 and 12, practically every boy in the United States dreams of becoming president. He wants to be his country's number one man. As he gets older and sees the impossibility of this, he can smile good-naturedly at his childhood dreams. In later life, he finds that real happiness is not to be found in just trying to be a number one man or even a first rate in the heartbreaking struggle for money, romance, and self-importance. He learns that he can be content as long as he plays well whatever cards life deals him. He's still ambitious, but not absurdly so, because he can now see and accept actual reality. He is willing to stay right size. So the problem is not whether all of us are so, you know, all the same and everybody else is the same, only we make a big deal of it. It is that way that we didn't grow up emotionally. And this is what the program is helping me gradually do. Look, it continues that they asked the doctors to look into it of what is so the common denominator. And he says they finally they came up with a conclusion that shocked the AA members of this time, of their time. The distinguished men had the nerve to say that most of alcoholics under investigation were still childish, emotionally sensitive, and grandiose. And so this is why we're here together. Yeah, I wrap up to hear people just saying, I've changed and it's happening, and incredible. Right on. Thank you for being there. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Raphael E. Okay, Evan U, good morning. You're up next, followed by Lorraine N.
Hi, this is Evan U from California. Lovely to be here with you all. I had to share on this today. This paragraph just sums me up. I know all of you are sitting there on the line today saying, I really want to understand what really makes Evan U tick. Well, this is it. The drive for success was on. I'd proved to the world I was important. That has been my primary desire and primary strategy for life. And, you know, it comes from just boatloads of self-hatred. And, you know, I was meditating and thinking this morning, it's like I have been trying to design a life for myself that I'll be happy. I'll move all the pieces around the board, you know, and but it's all self-will. And I was thinking that it's like the food is the symptom for me. It's the sort of final solution. I'm trying to make my life work, and self-will is not working. So it's like self-will is the glacier, and food is just the tip of the iceberg, and the weight, that's the tip of the iceberg that people can see. But the real source of the problem is just me desperately trying to figure out how to survive. This little 8-year-old boy who picked up food, lived in a violent home, you know, and carried that fear of violence and also all those violent voices around in my head. Like, that's what I was trying to outrun and use the food to get away from, to get to oblivion, so that I didn't have to deal with just that life view that life was out to get me, you know. And it just really, you know, it's like the Titanic is just my self-will, and me rearranging things is just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. As long as I'm using myself as the guide, that boat's going down. It doesn't matter. You know, and what I see today, it's I always get it backwards. It's like I want to change the world to make me happy. And it's just like what program is showing me is like, as I change inside, I get a new pair of glasses, a new way of seeing life that is wonderful and delightful and peaceful and happy. And that's what God uses to create a new and different life for me. It's not the other way around. And so for today, it's just accepting my powerlessness with the food, but also with mainly with managing my life, and also with dealing with all those feelings. It's like, that's God's job, is to heal all that stuff, not mine. I can't fix the self-hatred that has just sort of ruled my insides. But God can, if he is sought. So thanks for being here, all of you, and have a great day.
Thank you, Evan U. Okay, Lorraine N., you're up, followed by Barbara P.
Hi, good morning. Lorraine N., compulsive eater in Oregon. Oh boy, what an amazing paragraph. You know, when I, like a lot of these shares that have already been shared, I did not identify with Bill's story at all. I thought, this is a white guy, old, 19, whatever he was born, and like, what does he know about my life? But having read through the big book many times now, this paragraph describes me to a T. I have just bracketed the whole thing. I remember binging my brains out the night before my high school entrance exam. We had to take an exam to get into this academy. And I was so sick and woke up late in the morning. And my brother was yelling at me to eat something because he was going to drive me. He said, he hands me a banana in the car, which I couldn't eat because I was so sick from the night before. But I tried to eat it, so he'd see I ate it. But anyway, I don't know how I passed that exam, but I got into that school, which I hated, but that's another story. And then up here where Bill says, I took a night course and attained employment and blah, blah. The drive was for success was on. I'd proved to the world I was important. That was me, full of ego and false pride. You know, I married young, out of my race. The family disowned me. My father, you know, God, it was him, really. I was trying to prove that I could be successful. And I took off with my two kids, went to California, and, you know, I took a hairdressing course, and I did hair for the next almost 40 years. And I was a big fish in a little pond. I had a small salon in a small town in California, and I just thought I was all that, making enough money to wine and dine, and I thought I had arrived. And I think back at that poor girl who knew nothing. I mean, I was just self-will run riot, and I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. So thank God for this program. You know, I don't ever remember anyone saying to me, let's talk about values. What are your values? In fact, there's a place in this book that talks about values, and I have written in the column, what are mine? I didn't even know. Building character, I don't remember people teaching me that. And if they did, I didn't hear it. So, you know, thank God at this late date in my life that I have found my way to this program. God has led me to this program. I trust and believe and know that. And I am going to continue to trust that God that brought me here to take me through. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share. I felt compelled to share this morning. Thank you. I'll pass.
And thank you, Lorraine N. Okay, I have two people left, Barbara P. and I think it was Kathy T. And we only have about 3 minutes. So if you want to cut your shares a little short, we can get you both in. So go ahead, please, Barbara P.
Good morning. This is Barbara P. and from the Atlanta area. The line I wanted to, that really struck me is the line from the doctor's opinion keeps coming at me, which is just, you know, after a while, they cannot differentiate the true from the false. And it is so, like everyone has said, I can so relate, because here's Bill saying at one of the finals, he's too drunk to think or write. But then in the same paragraph, he's also saying that men of genius are conceiving their best projects when drunk. So, like, what is it? You know, and that's me with eating. I remember sitting there studying in college and always had to have a bag of something next to me. And I did. I thought it gave me energy. I thought it made me smarter. It made me retain information better. Those lies are, it feels so clear today how I completely believe the lies, despite the repercussions. I would imagine if he was too drunk to think or write, he had some repercussions. I had plenty, but I couldn't see it. I just couldn't tell the true from the false. And this disease can still do that to me today. I know that, and that's why I need this program. I need this higher power so badly, because that no mental defense, it's sitting right there. And this is even before he got worse. This is only page 2, right? So with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Barbara P. And Kathy, was it Kathy T? You have about 2 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kathleen. This is Kathy Z from Duval, Washington, compulsive eater. Nighttime was the trigger word there in that paragraph for me. I did not know that I was a compulsive overeater 5 years ago. I'd been told all my life my eyes were bigger than my stomach. Now that this book, this fantastic book that is helping me learn more about my character, learn more about my past and why I do the things I do, has just been so revealing and fantastic. And so, yes, back then, 5 years ago, I was in school and I was using food as my reward at the end of the day after I'd done all my studies. So food and drink. And that's when I started gaining weight, started having health problems, problems with my heart, problems with my blood sugar. And I did not know that's what was going on until I came into this program. And so I'm so thankful. Also, I was propelling myself back then. I was not propelled by surrendering to my higher power. And so I'm so thankful today that I could set aside everything I know and that I can ask God to relieve me of the self of bondage. I can ask Him to show me what He would have me be, and that His will is done every day in my life. And life is a lot more effortless. It's not easier, but it's effortless in my own power. And I'm so thankful for everyone here, for our fellowship, and I'm thankful for the big book, and I'm thankful for God. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kathy V. Okay, and thank you for everyone. Thank you, all of you that shared some really great shares this morning. Really appreciate all of you being here. So we are going to now close with a reading from the big book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So KP, would you please read A Vision for You? Okay, we can't hear you. Can you start one to unmute?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was a little slow getting the buttons pushed. My name is KP. I'm from Malden, South Carolina. Gratefully recovered for today. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.